Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is our weekly Hoops HD report, and we are coming to you here, recording evening of Monday, January 27th, and in a somber note at, by far, coming the day after we found out the absolutely tragic, awful news about one of the greatest college, not college, one of the greatest basketball players of all time, Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna, passing away as a result of a helicopter accident along with seven others in the Los Angeles area. And we wanted to start tonight by giving those on our panel here a chance to, you know, offer their thoughts and comments about Kobe. And I've got with me David Griggs, Rocco Miller, and John Stalica tonight. Rocco, why don't I start with you? I know you're a West Coast guy. You probably saw a lot more of Kobe than I did during his career. You know, just your thoughts on this absolute tragic event and on what a player and what a person Kobe was.
Yeah. Thanks, Chad. It was a pretty stunning, unfathomable day yesterday. I didn't realize when the news first broke, of course, didn't want it to be true like many others. And, as the day went on, it just got worse and worse. And, even today, the story kept getting worse, and it's just really hard to accept. And I, you know, what I couldn't imagine at the start of the day yesterday was the gravity of this, just how many people, not just in the basketball community, but it, worldwide, and all the things Kobe was starting to do with his life after his NBA career. For me personally, you know, he's basically been the face of the sport since I was a teenager, and the Seattle Sonics, of course, existed back then. And Kobe came to town, and it was always the toughest ticket. And, you know, it's, and obviously our focus is college basketball. It's my personal focus. I really haven't followed the NBA much since the Sonics left, but obviously we all know his presence and what he means. And if you look at today's college basketball, I mean, probably half the players out there wear a version of Kobe Bryant's shoes, probably close to half, if not more, were inspired when they were young to go out and pick up a basketball and start playing. You also, you know, Ken Pomeroy had a great study a couple of years ago, how many players and people in college basketball are named after Kobe. I think they're in the hundreds. So it's just, I mean, those are just a couple samples of the things that went through my mind. And I woke up yesterday really excited to watch games like San Diego State, UNLV, and Northern Iowa, Loyola Chicago. And those games were on my TV, and I honestly couldn't really process the games. I just couldn't stop thinking about this impact and reaching out to close friends and everything. So my condolences to the Bryant family and everybody involved. It's really tough to accept.
Yeah, I mean, it really hit home with me too. I first saw it on a couple of tweets, and I was like, no, this can't be real. Going back and forth, waiting to see if any real, like, you know, major news organizations confirmed it. That when the news really started coming out there, and it was, you know, just, you know, I didn't know how to react. Quite honestly, it was one of those moments. David, let me turn to you.
Yeah, and again, no puppet for this. It's, you know, we're not having that on the screen, but I mean, just to kind of echo what Rocco said about like just the overall impact and how far reaching this was. I think that a lot of the people that are grieving over this or that were touched by it didn't actually know him personally. And there's nothing really unusual about that, because while they didn't know him personally, sports can be a powerful shared experience. And what they did know was watching him on television with either themselves or their friends and getting excited. And they remembered those moments. I mean, with their parents or family or with their children. And sport is by no means the only like powerful shared experience. There's music, there's movies, but when someone that's made an impression upon you like that, and you have those memories, and you have those memories of the people that you experience them with, when suddenly that person is gone, whether it's Kobe Bryant or Prince or Michael Jackson or Stan Lee, I think that the reason it hits people so hard is because they feel like a piece of that memory and that experience is gone as well. So while they may not have known them personally, they still attribute, you know, a lot of their passions to him. I don't really watch the NBA. I did see him play, and I certainly knew who he was, but it didn't really hit me until yesterday just how many people who play college basketball now grew up looking to him the way a lot of people look up to those like rock stars or sports athletes that I saw before, and how many of them today feel a huge sense of loss, whether they knew him or not. Most didn't, but they still have that huge sense of loss. And, you know, like everybody watching and listening to this, why would you make, he didn't play college basketball, but he impacted and influenced just about everyone that's playing college basketball now.
He did. And it is, you know, John, let me turn to you, let you add any other thoughts you'd like to add in.
Yeah, I think we were starting to get news of what had happened. I want to say around 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, just as the Maryland-Indiana game was concluding. And I think while reading the updates on Twitter, you would also kind of notice that towards the final 3 minutes of the game, even though Indiana was leading, the crowd was actually starting to get a little bit quieter, seemed to be peeking at their phones as they started to realize what had happened. And I think you also saw later in the day in a couple of other games like Michigan State and Minnesota, for example, I think Cassius Winston was actually learning from Tom Izzo just before they were about to do a post-game interview. And obviously he was pretty dumbstruck as well. And keep in mind, I think Winston was also – he had just been dealing with the loss of his own brother unexpectedly back in November. So it probably was going to hit home in some respect or another. And even me personally, it's been about a year since I found out my sister had died unexpectedly, and also brought some memories of that hit home as well. And it's one of those things that even then it never leaves you. But I guess I'm more struck not just by Kobe Bryant and his legacy, but also the legacy he was starting to pass on to his daughters as well.
Yeah, I remember, I think one of the games where it was first announced on TV, I was watching, I think Avery Johnson was one of the commentators, and he was, you know, just unable to even talk about it. It was, that's kind of how I felt too. But the fact is that the games do continue. College basketball does continue. And what we want to do is, you know, with, you know, our condolences out there to everybody. We do want to talk about what's happened in the college basketball world over the past week, what's coming up the next week, and where we are with everything. And David, I want to, you know, as we move into this subject here, bring up something that we actually, Sleeka, you tried to bring up last week, but it's something we're going to be doing a lot of as we move on this season. That is blind resume tests. As we start looking at college basketball teams and see who deserves to be in the assembly tournament and who doesn't. And I'm not asking you guys to try to guess what teams are up here, but I'm going to go ahead and start by putting the screen share up with two blind resumes that we ought to be able to read this week, hopefully, as opposed to last week, John. Yeah. But, you know, and I want to just kind of ask, David, let me start by asking you. I've got two resumes here, one team on the left there with one tier one home win and not much else, and team with a tier one road win as long as three other wins away from home in tier two. And ask you, you know, just on that and the few things you see on the screen here, which team do you think is the better team?
Let me see. Well, the top of the one on the right, the top of the resume of the one on the right is certainly better.
Right.
More road wins, more – the one on the right. The one on the right.
And Rocco, if you look at something like that, would you agree with that as you look as a bracketologist that there may be a little bit more meat on the one on the right, especially given that they've done stuff away from home?
Well, it's a good question. It does actually look like the accumulation of tier one, two, and three is larger on the right. Of course, the strength of schedule is very strong on the left, and number 12 non-conference is very impressive. Three neutral wins. I have a feeling I know who these teams are, but I won't say it.
Okay. Well, let me go ahead and reveal it, actually, then.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a
go
good
ahead.
Guess as to who the team on the left is, but I'm still trying to figure out who the team on the right was.
The team on the left is – oh, no, I was going to say Arizona.
I thought it was Maryland.
No, we got the Arizona Wildcats there on the left who just barely missed staying in the top 25 this week, and the Northern Iowa Panthers on the right who most people don't even reject to be an at-large bid candidate. Go ahead.
I think the biggest difference is the fact that Northern Iowa's got the two black guys with 150 plus losses, but they're on the road and they're in their league. I give them a personal pass because, you know, we've talked about it before, how tough it is to go on the road in the Valley. I've always, since Arizona still doesn't have a road win, I've been reluctant to move them up. I know a lot of other people have already. I kind of agree with this being pretty similar, although I don't think it's realistically going to happen where Northern Iowa will be picked ahead of Arizona.
I think it's just an interesting test, and we'll try to do a few more of these as the season goes on. But I want to actually now turn to some of the actual standings. And I had a chance this afternoon to go on the radio down in Lubbock, Texas with Ryan Hyatt and Raiderland down there. I did post down there on the website a link to that our chat today. Yeah. And during that chat, we kind of spent a couple minutes talking about the national scene. And he brought up a team that I think that the entire country might be underrating. I think he did also. And I want to start there in the Atlantic 10.
Oh, the specifically,
A-10. We haven't started with the A-10 all season, I don't think.
Right.
This Dayton Flyers team. And Sleeka, let me bring you in now. You are from Ohio. How good is this team? And is the nation, even though they're number 7 in both polls, is the nation underrating them?
I think I've teased it a couple times earlier in the season. The script for Dayton in the past would be you might actually get off to a decent start, but they tended to hit the skids a little bit early in league play, and their road trip to Philadelphia was where I was slowly starting to believe. I mean, ordinarily we wouldn't be thinking too much of wins against St. Joe's and LaSalle this year, but those were – arenas where I think Dayton had lost 4 in a row at LaSalle. They had lost 8 in a row against the Hawks. And then when you look at what they're doing against top contenders in the Atlantic 10, they blew away VCU. They had a somewhat decisive win against Richmond, and they did have to hit a buzzer beater just to win the Arch Baron Cup at St. Louis. So I don't know how many more tests are going to be remaining for the Flyers, but you never want to discount the possibility that someone unexpected could tip over the apple cart right here.
Well,
I was going to say, what's going to be interesting is their next game is going to be at Duquesne, which is actually going to be at a PPG Paint. So I don't know if that's going to be an arena that's going to have more Flyer fans or more Duke fans, to be honest.
Yeah, well, the thing about this Dayton team is they have – while everybody sort of points out, well, they haven't taken down any protected seeds like – you know, are they on par with the other protected seeds when they haven't beaten any? Well, you know, the overtime game against Kansas was pretty impressive despite the loss. They really probably should have beaten Colorado. I mean, I'll give you that. Like, a protected seed on a neutral court probably beats Colorado. But when you look at what else they've done, they smashed St. Mary's. I know the score was 10, but they were up by 20 for part of that. They went in the Richmond – like, blew that open. Richmond kind of closed it up to late. It looked respectable. The game at St. Louis, Dayton really did not play that well. They were down by 13 on the road against a team that really needed to win that game in a hostile environment, and that was their showcase game. And from that point on, they regrouped. And like, when you're in a game like that and you're not playing well and then suddenly you regroup and get back in it and win, I think that says a lot about you. The other thing I like about this Dayton team, and I'd like Rocco's opinion on this as well, as while the teams aren't ranked in the top 25, but like, you have St. Mary's and Richmond and St. Louis and VCU who plays full court, and like Georgia who relies on athleticism, and on down the list, they have played a lot of different kinds of teams and they have played well against all of them. So where's the weakness here? I mean, if a team is big and likes to slow it down, Dayton can beat them. If a team's athletic and likes the pressure, Dayton can beat them. That is another sign of a team that is built, in my opinion, to go deep into the tournament.
I agree, David. I think this Dayton team, you know, we did a breakdown with Kyle Lamb last week on them. They, They pretty much almost every timeout, except for a couple of their wins, have blown the other team out of the water. And that just shows to the superiority of their talent and the way they play together well as a team. In their close calls, it's a little concerning that they didn't play well in that Colorado game late. They did have a huge lead in that game, and they let it squander away late. Colorado put a lot of pressure. Colorado's a very experienced team. So I feel like in the tournament, I don't think any of us would argue. Maybe somebody will, but I think they're a legitimate Final Four contender.
Yeah, they are.
I think my only concern about them is when they get into those tight situations. You know, if Crutcher doesn't make that three against St. Louis, that's a loss. Fortunately, he did make it. But the Colorado game showed us that there is a little bit of flaw when they get these tight possession late game situations, which we've only seen them had to deal with a couple times. By the time they get to the tournament, it's probably going to be a similar situation. So teams that don't deal with that very much during the season can sometimes go out of the tournament early once they're in a tight situation, like Gonzaga in previous years, for example. But beyond that, I think sky's the limit.
This team, I agree, this team, the sky is the limit. I'm not going to ready to say that this is a Final Four team, but I think they are a second weekend team, which is a Sweet 16, maybe even Elite Eight. And heck, if you're in the Elite Eight, you're one win away from the Final Four. So
But I've also got to think that just winning the Atlantic 10 tournament is also going to be a goal, because that's something the Flyers haven't done since 2003. So that's going to be a span of 17 seasons right there.
Yes,
John Stalica, our almanac over here.
A lot of interesting games coming up. They got Duquesne twice. They have Rhode Island twice still. And I like this Rhode Island team, probably second best in the A-10 right now. Maybe them or Richmond. They got to go to VCU, and they do have the A-10 tournament. Real quick, David, is there a chance for another at-large bid from this league? Whether it's Rhode Island or Richmond or VCU, those I think are the only three that we're really focusing in on. St. Louis to a lesser degree, but not.
Well, yeah, I would have said St. Louis until about a week ago, but I think if it's going to if a team's going to play their way inside the bubble, it's got to be one of those three, and they got to run away from the rest of the league. Duquesne, I just want to give a shout out to them. They are not going to land inside the bubble, but as a program, I think that Dan Brott has done extremely well there, and it's been fun to watch them sort of progress over the years. And while they haven't gotten all the way to being a tournament level team, they're certainly better now than they've been really in any memory, recent or distant. I don't think it's going to be them. And I don't think it's going to be Davidson, who I think started off in the rankings or close to it.
Yeah, Davidson was preseason picked second in the conference. That they just, at this point, they have to win the A-10 tournament, in my opinion. But
disappointing year for what is typically a very well-coached team, not showing it this year.
Other than Dayton's two games this week, the other team I'd look at in terms of games coming up this week is VCU. If they can get back in it, this is a big week for them, hosting Richmond and then at Rhode Island, playing two of those other teams that are up near the tops of the standings.
Those should be two fun ones. The Richmond VCU rivalry. I still think the Old Dominion rivalry might be a little more heated, but this one's pretty heated. It's a fun one.
Let's jump over to the Big 12 conference, because I was mentioning that, and this was SEC Big 12 week, and we had a thrilling 5-5 tie, so nobody wins, nobody loses.
By the same token, this is an improvement for the Big 12 after getting a slam by the Big East 8-2 in that inaugural series.
What I would say about the Big 12, though, Rocco, they're four teams that look like they are clearly NCAA tournament teams at this point. Baylor, Kansas, West Virginia, Oklahoma were four of their five wins.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma still has a little bit of work left to do, but that was a really important win. Mississippi State was playing their best basketball of the year. It came down to the wire, and they found a way to get it done. So good job by the Sooners. And I think beyond those four, Texas Tech is, like, right on the edge. I'm sure you chatted about that earlier today.
Yeah, I mean the loss I could – I mean, how huge would that have been a win if they could have beaten Kentucky, that they just couldn't quite pull it out? It was a great game, though.
It was a great game. They're definitely competitive and, of course, well-coached. I feel like at some point against the top four here in the Big 12, they'll have a breakthrough moment. And ideally for Red Raider fans, it's on the road, so they can really boost their resume. I think the rest of the league, it's been a little bit, of course, as a disappointment. TCU's been a tiny surprise, but still not close to the cut line. A lot of opportunity still ahead for the bottom five to beat the top five, but right now, it looks like five max.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's five. I mean, Texas and TCU both on my radar if they can get red hot. I just don't think they've got the talent to do it, quite frankly. But David, upcoming this week is a really interesting week, starting Wednesday night, actually the whole week for Texas Tech, but they get West Virginia at home, which when you look at a team like Texas Tech that has one notable win, it was over Louisville on a neutral court. This is what they need, is something like this on this resume.
They do.
I'll pull the resume up on the screen here in 1 second.
Yeah, okay, they do. And like you said, like the win against Kentucky would have been really big, but they still have those opportunities. They're good enough, in my opinion, to get the wins that they need, but they just haven't done it yet. I noticed that they're squarely on our bubble. That is a lot of empty calories on that resume. And when you look at the games they've lost, I mean, they were competitive against Baylor, who's ranked number one. You know, against Iowa, they were kind of competitive. Creighton, they were right in there. Kentucky, overtime. DePaul, you know, that was a close game. I know DePaul slipped a little bit, but essentially, like, they've looked good in those losses. And had they pulled a couple of them out, we're not even having this conversation. But when you look at what they have coming up, West Virginia at Texas, I know Texas is probably not a tournament team, but winning there would certainly double the number of decent wins on their profile. So they've got the chances, and I think they're good enough to do it. They just haven't done it yet.
Right, right. And the fact that there's nothing bad on the, I mean, the worst losses are at TCU and at DePaul. Those are not awful. These are NIT caliber losses, at least. They don't have.
Yeah.
I mean, Kentucky has a way worse loss than this team has. So there's not the big blemish. So you add one or two good wins, and you're suddenly looking at a team that's solidly in the field. Are you not, Rocco?
I agree with that. And I think the Kentucky game is actually, like, incredibly important for them, even though they lost it, because coming into that game, their non-conference strength of schedule was in the 270s, and they jumped all the way to 185 with that. And that just allows them, if they are near the cut line on Selection Sunday, that's not going to hinder them from getting in now. So unless they're going up against a compared to four teams that are all in the top 50, but otherwise 185, you can still go to Dayton. I just think that's huge that they got that Kentucky game on their schedule, win or lose.
Yeah. Chet, can we discuss another team, if I may? I mentioned this in the write-up. I think it was yesterday. Baylor. And the reason I'd like to mention them is because, like, the biggest talking point all over college basketball on Twitter, the talking heads, is that it's wide open. There's no dominant team. Pull up Baylor's profile and tell me how this is not dominant. Like, when did we have dominant quote-unquote teams in college basketball?
It's very simple. Rock will agree with me. They lost to a sub-NIT team. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, okay.
The best team in the country. They lost to the best team.
Yeah. But look at that. At Kansas, Villanova, who's in the top 10, at Florida, who only has another home loss, at Texas. Like, whenever we had dominant teams in college basketball, when were any more dominant than that?
And you got to look that they also have – they could add a lot more to this. They've got West Virginia twice still. They've got a road game to Oklahoma. They've got Texas Tech coming up again at home. This is – you know, if they keep winning and they only lose once or twice here, they are going to have an unbelievable profile with a few more of those. They have enough – they may have enough Tier 1A wins to be a one seed already.
Yeah, and it's like if you go back to last year or the year before, whenever it was when we had dominant teams, and look at a team's profile at the end of January, when was one so much better than that, like, you can just come out and say there's no dominant teams? Now, I know as I'm saying this, they're probably going to fall apart and lose five of their next six just because, like, that's just how it works whenever I say something. But my good, I think the thing is, nobody was expecting it to be Baylor, and now that it is Baylor, no one has – they've either not noticed or not admitted.
It's not a blue blood name. Let's keep rolling here. Right. Let me go over to you and go over to the other half of the Big Ten, sorry, the Big 12 SEC Challenge, which was the SEC half, which we saw on the SEC, to the extent they got wins, Auburn, a 4-point win, Alabama, a 3-point win, LSU, only by two at Texas, Kentucky, overtime, Texas Tech. So it wasn't, even though the SEC got the tie, they kind of struggled to get there.
Well, I think in the case of Auburn especially, that was one where they were just literally holding serve because they had been on a bit of a slide themselves. I mean, granted, they did rebound with the win at home against South Carolina, and Iowa State probably played their best game away from home, albeit in a losing effort here. But I think by the same token, it's also a testament to Baylor that they were still able to win by 11 points at Florida, who still could have really used a win themselves, but were unable to pull one off. And you look at Alabama slowly trying to creep towards the bubble themselves. It had to be a little bit disconcerting that they could only beat K-State by 3 at home.
And Rocco, let me bring up a team here. John mentioned them briefly. Had an 0-2 week, although they were both for cold losses. The Florida Gators, team schizophrenia this year, I think.
Well, I thought they played really well in the Bayou. That game came down to the last possession.
They lost.
Really no harm, no foul. I think the loss to Baylor, we'll find out as the season goes on. But, yeah, they're a little schizophrenic based on their mixed early season.
Look at their upcoming schedule. And, honestly, they should win all the way up until February 22nd at Kentucky. There's nothing there that looks like a huge test.
They'll probably be favored by probably 5-plus in each of those games. So they got to find a way to get it done. I thought coming into the last week they had really turned it around. There was a game the week before where they blew out a pretty solid team. That was Auburn by 22.
Auburn win.
So I think the jury's out. I think they're definitely good enough to be a tournament team, no doubt. Talent's there. And they just can't let that Baylor loss discourage them. Baylor's on fire. So,
but knowing their schizophrenia wouldn't surprise me if they stumble at home against Georgia or at Ole Miss.
Right.
Those are dangerous games.
And there's not much room for any more of those slip-ups is kind of what I'm saying here. But, David, the upcoming schedule here for this week in the SEC, I'm not certain what – I guess it's Saturday's game, Kentucky at Auburn, is the big game, correct?
Well, yeah, that one is. But how about tomorrow's game for Auburn? If you pull up Auburn's profile – don't skip over this Ole Miss game, because it would probably be, up until this point, one of the best wins they have, at least one of the top two wins that they have, if they're able to pull it off. Auburn has beaten some NIT-ish teams, but Richmond and St. Louis, not true road games. They've beaten Mississippi State, who's NIT-ish, and this would double the number of road games against NIT-ish teams. So while it might not be that impressive, it actually improves, in my opinion, their profile.
Well, actually, that would be a tier 2B win. So I think there's quite a few better wins than that on the profile. But it would be a big negative on the profile to lose it that they don't have right now. And that's what's going for Auburn, is a strong strength of schedule, a good conference, and nothing bad, and a lot of wins.
And I think another reason they need to win that too is because you look at the next four after that; those are all going to be tough tests. Even though three of them are at home, it's four teams very capable of beating Auburn.
Yeah, and that's where I think over the next 2 weeks how good this Auburn team really is. I just don't know that we've found out yet. It's just kind of
we haven't. Yeah.
Let's jump over to the ACC.
Okay.
Because we got to go somewhere. Salika. Yeah. You got Louisville, Florida State, Duke. We did a bracket rundown show last week on Thursday night. I think we had all these teams. I think we had all three of them on the two line. This is a group of teams that are all probably maybe still fight for one seats.
Yeah, you're going to have three teams that are probably going to be on the top three lines, and then you got a big chasm down to the next group of teams. I think one of them we saw tonight was NC State, who now has back-to-back losses to NIT teams are even below.
And below.
Of course, yet they've now been swept by Georgia Tech, which is going to be a bit of a red mark for them. And how do you treat a team like North Carolina, who's quietly won two in a row themselves after getting off to such a horrible start in January?
And still a chance Cole Anthony could be back soon. So who knows with Carolina, although, you know, I was saying this before we went on the show, but North Carolina, I think with all they've done bad, I don't know how they get back to the at-large conversation, but if Cole Anthony's healthy and they start playing well, they could win an automatic bid. They could win the ACC tournament. I think they have enough talent for that. But Rocco, this NC State team going in the wrong direction, and a team on the right there that I think is seriously going in the right direction in the orange.
Hey, absolutely. Oh. Yeah. Syracuse playing very well. I think they've won 5 or 6 straight.
Five.
And a good chunk of those on the road, as you see on the left here on the screen. So I think they're going to get their shot with Duke coming up this weekend. That'll be big. And then they're going to go to Florida State and Louisville and back to backers. So it's a great problem to have for Syracuse, because they're creeping their way up the group of teams that are trying to fight their way into the bracket.
They've just got to avoid playing in the Carrier Dome where they can't play very well against good teams. Yeah. So they got to go
on the road a lot. It's a bizarro Boeheim team.
Yeah, it really is.
But we've seen this before.
It's tough to win in the Carrier Dome, you know? Yeah. Hey.
Yeah. We've seen them struggle early and get hot late, and it could be happening again. So we'll see. NC State, on the other hand, everything going wrong, not only the way they're playing on the court, but even games that they lost that were acceptable are getting worse. So swept against Georgia Tech. Clemson seems to be getting worse. They just got killed against Louisville, not competitive. Obviously, Memphis having all sorts of trouble. So their loss category is a lot uglier now than it was a week ago.
The upcoming schedule here, David, for the ACC, we've got obviously we mentioned the Duke-Syracuse game as one of the big games this week. We've also got coming up tomorrow night, Florida State at Virginia, a Virginia team that is still definitely in the conversation. And the huge game, Morehouse at Georgia Tech.
Yeah, Morehouse. That one, circle that one. But, this Florida State at Virginia game, it's a Florida State team that's trying to fight their way up onto the one line and a Virginia team that's trying to fight their way inside the bubble. And it might be better than you think because it's a road game against a Virginia team that should come out and understand the importance of this and that is capable of playing better than what we've seen the last couple of weeks. Duke Syracuse, again, a big one on Saturday.
Yeah, and a sleek of the other two big ones, Louisville at NC State, Florida State at Vatek on Saturday as well. So it's a big weekend in ACC hoops.
Yeah, Vatek kind of going in the wrong direction. Sorry.
And the thing is, we could suddenly be looking at Carolina, assuming a win over BC. They could suddenly have a three-game winning streak themselves going into Florida State for next Monday night, which if you're the Noles, that's not a game you can be overlooking by any stretch, but you look at Florida State right here. I've said myself I would have them slightly ahead of Duke, but it's going to be tough to go through the gauntlet of Virginia Tech and North Carolina 3-0.
I'll tell you, I just noticed as I'm looking at the screen here, in the far right columns, you see the AP and coaches poll votes. You've got three teams in the top 10 in both polls. And not a single other team in the conference receiving a single vote for either poll. Yeah. I don't know that I've ever seen a conference with that big of a gap here, but that's a gap that Sleeker, you mentioned at the start, and I think you get on there.
And Chad, I think today you could make an argument that they're the only three teams inside the bubble, even.
I think you can. I think
Syracuse.
I think Syracuse is currently on the right side, but barely there, and maybe Vatek still. They haven't had multiple losses like NC State has.
But I also think Virginia is actually creeping back as well.
Yeah, and I do have an under the radar Easter egg for you, Chad. Up until this weekend, I would have said the A-Sun had that big of a gap between Liberty and everybody else. But
That's done and over.
Yeah.
Rocco, let's jump over to the Big East Conference here. And here's a conference where we can see AP and coaches poll votes, a few more of them, going down five teams at least, and a few teams below those that are still definitely in the hunt.
How is Creighton not ranked?
Creighton just barely missing the rankings today, but two top 10 teams in Seton Hall and Villanova. And let's have this Seton Hall team because I think this team is playing unbelievably good basketball at the moment.
Yeah, I've been high on Seton Hall for the last month, and I just saw a tweet today that Sandro's coming back in their next game, so even more depth and quality coming to the roster. They got an incredible resume. Look at all those road wins in the top column. Whether it be 1A or 1B, those are all tough places to get W's. And I just think the quality of play it not only shows that they belong in the top two seed lines, but they're also capable of cutting down the nets. I think they're that good, and they've got the star power, and they've got the depth. I mean, guys like McKnight and the cast of characters they have, I mean, they're built for a title run. They got to just get over kind of all the the history of Seton Hall, not typically getting that far, but if they can do that, they have the team to do it.
Yeah, absolutely they do. And even their losses were all close losses, except for against the unbelievable team they played from Piscataway, New Jersey. That completely crushed them. But
that was also the same game where Miles Powell had a concussion.
We don't talk about that part.
Yeah.
It was a full-strength Seton Hall team.
Started full strength.
Yeah, they did. Miles Powell, obviously Sandro was not there for that game, but he hasn't been there for a lot of these games. Powell missed most of that game as well. But David, beyond Seton Hall and Villanova, Creighton and Butler still both playing well. Marquette really moving up the standings as well.
Yeah, I mean, Butler had that skid where they lost three in a row. They kind of bounced back from that. They needed
with the Marquette win on Friday, yeah.
Yeah, with the Marquette win. I like how this Creighton team's been playing. They had a really nice win against Xavier over the weekend. Providence has I wanted to do something this week, but I might save it till next week. Teams outside the bubble that are playing like NCAA caliber teams, Providence fits that description. The only problem is, are they going to run out of season before they've made up all the ground that they
need?
They
can't, well, you lose it when you're losing, you know, the close game. Well, you couldn't pull out the game against Villanova that you needed to pull out to make up for that bad stuff. I don't think Providence can get there. I do think Providence will be a dangerous team in the Big East tournament, though.
Oh, they will.
They'll be a real tough out in that event.
Yeah,
so kind of like North Carolina in the ACC, Providence is a team that I'm not scratching off my board as making it in, but I think they're good. They could get in the back doorway there.
For DePaul, I think the magic number is 8, which means finishing 7-4. Can they do it?
I don't know. They really blew a chance at home against St. John's, and now 1-6 in conference. I don't know how you come back from 1-6 in conference.
And two of those losses are against St. John's, so That's about as easy of a stretch as they could have hoped for.
Right, because St. John's has beaten no one else.
For the most part this week, you're seeing the bottom half of the conference playing the top half of the conference. The big game, Rocco, that I circled, though, is Saturday's Creighton and Villanova game here.
That will be a good one. Creighton's had a little bit of problems on the road. I do expect Villanova to come out victorious, but Creighton's got so many shooters. You know, all it takes is one a good night stroking the ball from deep and, you know, make up a lot of that gap of playing on the road. So definitely should be a good one. I think Marquette's very good at home, but I do somewhat disagree that DePaul is actually really close to the bubble. I see some people actually still have them in. I know that the win at Iowa is carrying even more and more weight as time goes on. We'll see how Iowa does tonight. But, I mean, there's some places they've gotten wins, and the blowout over Butler – that just kind of would have to tell a committee or even Texas Tech's that win that this team is capable of doing some damage in the tournament. And if we're splitting hairs at the end, last couple slots, they might deserve a shot in Dayton.
I'll tell you what, I mean, you look, though, a couple things here. Non-conference strength of schedule, your intent to schedule, not good, 257.
I don't like that.
And, you know, you do have a tier 4 loss here. You do have a, you know, that Buffalo loss, even though the Providence loss is probably not really as bad as a tier 3 loss, I think the Buffalo loss is a bad loss. That's why not having this Johnny's game on the other side would have looked so much better. Right. And 4 out of 5 on the road now. I mean, this next 3 weeks
there's
so many opportunities coming.
If they win their next 5 and even it out, it's
they're in.
Then they're in good.
If they could get to 6-6 in conference, they'll be solidly in the field, I think. Yeah. Absolutely. But let's turn over, David, to the best conference of the nation.
The Northeast.
Pac-12. Second best conference of the nation, then the Big Ten. Talk about conference with a lot of teams getting top 25 bids, votes, at least everybody in the league is, and there are still 12 teams on the board. I don't think that most people are putting 12 teams in right now, but I think that you have 12 teams. If you did a field of 72 or maybe 75, you'd go 12 teams at this conference easily.
Yeah. Where to start? Well, I guess at the top with Illinois, who's they're struggling at home now against Whiskey, but this is a team that started off.
That's kind of funny because I was playing it because it's Iowa. That's hosting Whiskey.
Okay.
You said Illinois.
I'm a little kidding. Billy, you can erase that, right?
Yeah, sure. No problem.
Okay, great. Oh, good. So no one will hear me. So, like, Illinois, the thing about them is that they started off the season, it's sort of a slow pace, but, I mean, they just keep getting better and better and better. And they've been on a rampage. They've been winning at home. They've been winning on the road. And, you know, for a team that not only started off with no expectations, but seemed to be living up to those low expectations in the first couple of weeks, for them to be playing like a protected seed these last couple of weeks just goes to show you, like, what a great coaching job as far as how much that team has improved.
Let's look at a couple teams like here. At some of the games though, like for example, Salika on Friday, Purdue crushes Wisconsin, who had just played so well. But Purdue, then on the other hand, still only 11-9. They do that after they lose at home to Illinois by 17. Some of these teams just don't make any sense at the moment.
I mean, this is the perfect epitome of a Forrest Gump here saying life is a box of chocolates and you never know what you're going to get. Purdue is going to be the perfect example of that. Yeah. But I think the real team of the week here has to be Maryland, who actually got two wins away from home. They did struggle to get the win at Northwestern, but
they were down huge in that game. Yeah, go ahead.
But they did show some character, especially being down 7 late at Indiana and actually end up pulling ahead with a minute to play. And Jalen Smith, maybe a little over-exuberant after the game, and Coach Mark Turgeon certainly took exception to it, but I don't think there's really going to be any fallout from that one.
Yeah, and the more you look at this, Rocco, you look at the net ratings, you look at about 46, 47 teams, the top 46 or 47 teams normally are in the NCAA tournament. That's kind of where the cut line is, beyond the first four, beyond the at-large bids. If you were to build an NCAA tournament by net only right now, you have 12 teams in, including a Michigan team that's kind of going the wrong way, though.
They are.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's impressive, and it's been stabilized now for a few weeks that they've all been in the top 48, 40, 50 or so. So it's, I think with them all beating up each other, as long as one or two teams doesn't slip up to Nebraska Northwestern, which I'm sure somebody will, but as long as you don't do that multiple times, it'll probably all stay in the top 50. So I guess we just got to get used to that. But I think realistically, with all the matchups that are happening now and happening in the next 2 months, they're going to beat each other down to probably 8 or 9 bids instead of 10.
Well, but let me say here, every time you lose a game, it's not going to be a bad loss. Every time you win a game, it's going to be a good win. So I think as long as you stay, within maybe 4 games even of 500 in the conference standings, aren't you there?
Usually, I think a good example is last year's Big 12. It was just so darn good, all 10 teams, that eventually one of the teams or two are going to just eventually lose too many games. So if you point at Purdue, Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin, they all have 8 losses or more total. And at a certain point, if one of those, I have a feeling one of those will hit 16 or more. And once they get that 16th loss, they pretty much have played themselves out. Like Texas last year, they had huge wins over North Carolina, Ohio State, and others. And once they hit that 16th loss, they were just done. We all took them off the board. I think that's going to happen to one or two teams here.
Now, I think in the case of Michigan, you also have to keep in mind that Livers has been injured and has missed some critical games. And now you've got a suspension for Xavier Simpson. So I don't know if that's going to be a one-game thing or whether that's going to be
It's a one-game thing. He is out for the game at Nebraska coming up on Tuesday night.
They need that one.
They really got to win that. But we got, I mean, you look at the schedule as we record this right now, Wisconsin is leading Iowa in the second half. But we've got a lot. I mean, you could circle almost every game here as a big game, Penn State. Rutgers, a pair of huge games, home game against Purdue, and then a game at Madison Square Garden Cup on Saturday against Michigan. Good chance, a chance for a 2-0 week, also a chance for an 0-2 week, as you have for everybody here, though.
Yeah, a quick observation here, Chad. The Big Ten tournament, are we setting this up for the greatest, round of 12? Because it goes from 14 to 12.
I'll tell you
before the quarterfinals, is it going to be the greatest one we've ever seen in college basketball
history? I'll tell you what we're going to see, though. I think we're going to see a quarterfinals, the top 8 teams that probably being better than the top 8. The top 8 in the region. I mean, the Big Ten tournament is going to be better than probably better than an NCAA regional. That's how close these teams are. Let's jump, keep going here and move over. Let's say to Rocco, how about to your conference there, the Pac-12? If you want to discuss it, I don't know the way your Washington team is playing.
Well, I mean, yeah, we can start with Washington. I think it's been Heartbreak Hotel, as you guys know. Yeah,
I gotta find them way down there. Sorry. Okay.
There
they are at the bottom. Okay.
Unbelievable. But yeah, if the first 5 losses until the one against Colorado on Saturday were all basically on the last possession of the game in games that Washington leads in all. So, you're seeing a lot of articles about how they could have started 7-0 if they just closed out those 5 losses. Though nothing worse, in my opinion, than the game against Utah on Thursday. A gigantic second half lead. I still can't figure out how they blew the game. They have a really large propensity to turn the ball over without getting the ball stolen. Like, it's either a shot clock violation or a ball thrown away. Ken Pomeroy's got a stat for this called a non-steal turnover.
And
the Huskies are ranked like in the 330s in that category, and it's mind-boggling. So it's frustrating. Obviously, Quade Green injury has been a big – or I'm sorry, ineligibility has been a big problem, trying to fill that void. But this week, two more opportunities. With Arizona State's win over Arizona, Arizona State now firmly on the bubble, and a chance to play them on Saturday, the Wildcats on Thursday. And the Wildcats haven't won a road game, so something's got to give on Thursday night.
David, I want to ask you about two. Oh, I almost would argue as bubble teams here. On the left there, Arizona State now with that with a tier one win, and Stanford, who's lost a couple games and is suddenly kind of, especially with the Cal loss, kind of you're starting to hold your nose a little, aren't you?
Yeah, especially with the Cal loss. I mean, some of the other ones that they've lost, like USC, I thought that that was more indicative of how good USC was, even though Stanford did blow it. They made good accountings, with the exception of Kansas. I thought they made a really good account of themselves in a lot of those losses. But to lose to Cal, like, that is Stallings award-winning territory. Well, I don't know. Cal's better, but they're still really bad. That is the kind of game that if you are a tournament team, you need to win, especially when the top of your profile is so flimsy, which theirs is. Arizona State, I don't really like it. It's easier for me to criticize both of these teams than it is to praise them. They did get the win against Arizona, but and I did like the win at Oregon State, believe it or not. I know Oregon State's just 2-6, but to beat them on the road I thought was a pretty good road win. But still, I mean, just a whole lot of empty calories here. And I mean, they got to do more, both of them, than what they've done to get inside the bubble. Now they have Wazoo, Washington coming up. That's a chance for two road wins. If they get both of those, I'll like Arizona State a lot better.
Right. And we have warped back to a 2015 right here, because one thing that has gone on quietly is the Cal Golden Bears, now 3-0 at home in Berkeley. granted, they are miles away from any postseason.
Well, I want to bring Rocco in as a bracketologist. One more question about the Stanford team, though. Their net rating is still 18, even after the Cal loss. And I mean, it's just so out of whack with every other metric you see up there. And is there an explanation here?
My best guess is, without, you know, they don't tell us the net formula, but we have some ideas. I think they've just been really efficient in their wins, and they've done – I mean, they beat the crap out of Oklahoma. Right. That obviously helps. I think they won the majority of their non-league games in blowouts, and then they've had a couple blowouts against, like, Wazoo and I don't know, a couple other teams. They're winning big, and their efficiency rating's really good. But and then their losses, I think they've, besides Kansas, they've all been pretty close. So,
well, that's the thing, Rock. I mean, we don't know. We do know the variables to the net, and one of them is unadjusted, not adjusted, not the KenPom ones, but unadjusted offensive and defensive efficiency. So when you get out there and you're efficient against crap teams, it helps that piece of the net. And
look at the defense. They're number 8 in the country.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick look here at the upcoming games this week in the Pac-12. Stalika, you know, I think we mentioned a few of these. Maybe Oregon at Stanford, a big chance for both teams, and Colorado USC also on Saturday, a couple games to circle there.
Yeah, I teased it a little bit earlier in that both Bay Area teams are actually unbeaten at home in conference play, but I've got to think that's going to change with Oregon. Probably going to get at least one win on the road.
Yeah, this Oregon team, we didn't discuss it much, but this team I think is a very good team that's playing very good basketball right now.
Really good. And then it's just you almost have to appreciate them as a program. Last year was a down year for them, and they were in the Sweet 16.
Yeah. Salik, let me go back to it and jump over to the West Coast Conference here, which includes the team that, in a rarity, was number one in the nation, didn't lose a game, and has fallen to number two now in both polls this week, the Zags. But beyond them also, St. Mary's, BYU. I guess you got to look at BYU with the upset loss to San Francisco this week, which I want to go to Rocco on for a minute because I know you're at the game. But what about the Zags or the Gales at least?
Well, the Zags are pretty much holding up their end of the bargain with a blowout win against Pacific, but I can only imagine the pollsters were punishing them for only playing one game. But by the same token, I think we were also on the call when St. Mary's had gotten off to a slow start themselves and fell behind by, I think it was 9 points at home against the Dons, but
oh, it was actually, more than that. Wasn't it 24-9 or something like that?
Yeah, they fell behind big, but then, yeah. Even though the Dons blew that one, they didn't blow the game on Saturday, Rocco.
Yeah, it was a crazy game. BYU built up a 14-point lead in the start of the second half, and all of a sudden San Francisco goes on a 21-0 run eventually over the course of about 6 minutes. BYU couldn't miss in the first half, and they still shot like 50% for the game, but they just hit a little cold spell there. And the game was so back and forth, an amazing pace to watch. The real key moment was BYU was down by two with about 17 seconds left. San Francisco knew they were going to get the ball to Yoeli Childs. They get it to him quickly, and San Francisco believes in, you know, the Kyle Smith era has passed down to new coach Todd Golden, and they believe in a lot of the analytics-based decisions. And so they knew that Childs was a 59% free throw shooter, and they, even though they had a two-point lead, they put him on the line for 1-1.
Yeah.
And it paid off brilliantly. Yep. He bricked the first one, and then they had to play the foul game, and the Dons built up a 4-point lead, and BYU hit a meaningless three at the buzzer. They win by one.
Yep. It was just Jim Valvano would be proud.
I'll tell you what. If you go to Ken Palm's site, he has an article he wrote a few years back on actually the analytical benefit of fouling when up two, not up three. And it's a really fascinating piece, and it seems like they actually employed that technique.
Doesn't he – and I realize that there's a lot of variables. How good of a three-point shooting team are they or not? Like, but didn't he say that it's better to foul up two than it is up three?
Yeah, exactly. The conclusion is foul when you're up two because you can't lose the game on a three.
I got a chance to talk to Coach Golden for about 10 minutes after the game, and it was pretty cool because he said the decision was based on the fact that it was 1-1. He said if it would have been a two-shot foul, they would have never done it. And then he also said because he was 59%, he was the only player on the floor they were going to foul. So I give a lot of credit to those players for San Francisco. He also gave them a lot of credit that said, you know, they're very smart basketball IQ players, and there's been players they've coached before that they wouldn't trust to do that. But everybody was in sync and executed it brilliantly. So kudos to the Dons.
A few games.
All of the teams I like, I wouldn't trust any of them to do that.
A few games of note coming up this week. First of all, both on Saturday, Gonzaga at San Francisco that we just mentioned. The Dons might be in over their heads on that one, although it is at home.
It's been sold out for about 3 months, so it'll be fun atmosphere. Yeah.
And St. Mary's at BYU coming up on Saturday as well. Big game for both teams, actually.
But I think before that, it's going to be Santa Clara's turn to be in over their heads hosting Gonzaga.
That's why I didn't even mention that game. I'm not worried about that game. Who knows?
Santa Clara is in over their heads.
Mountain West Conference, really quickly, San Diego State still at the top of it. But, of course, when we talk about the Mountain West, we've got to mention the ConExpo ConAGG 2020 coming on March 10th through 14th, 2020. Register now at ConExpoConAGG.com.
Yeah, and where is that at the Thomas Mack Center?
The normal week of the Mountain West Tournament, as a result of that, means that the Mountain West Tournament will be a week early and actually will be the first automatic bid given out. Will be by a couple hours before the Ohio Valley bid comes out. Will be the Mountain West bid this year.
So this is new. Like, this is the first time in a while that it has not been the Ohio Valley.
And it was the Big South
for a while, but now it's the Mountain West because of the ConExpo, ConEd, whatever the hell.
Yeah. But when you look at San Diego State and their profile here, the question is, they're undefeated. Slika, where did they lose a game when you look at the rest of this schedule? At New Mexico, I would have said maybe before when they were at full strength or not. At Boise, home to Utah State. Are these two games, at New Mexico and home to Utah State, the two toughest games left on the schedule?
Honestly, I probably would circle Boise State as a possible trap game because I think the Broncos have also knocked down BYU and Utah State in
an amazing fashion, where they came back from down 25 points with 5 minutes left. But go ahead.
And I think Nevada could be another interesting game because if that's going to be what's standing between a regular season perfection, there's going to be a little bit of pressure on the Aztecs for that one right there. But by the same token, they're still going to have a home games against both New Mexico, UNLV, and Utah State still to come that – could tip the scales.
Chad, could you pull up Nevada on the other side there? The standings, Nevada. Nevada. I mean, I understand how you get confused. No, not the net, Nevada. Oh, okay, thanks.
Okay, it's coming up in a second here.
Yeah, it's coming up. This is great television.
There we go. There it is. Okay, Nevada, who lost at San Jose State. Go ahead.
Well, I do think that while they're – my point was I think they're getting – when they're not losing at San Jose State, they've started to play a little bit better. Their home record there, 9-2. So I think if San Diego State's going to lose one, it's going to be that one on the last game of the year. Now, okay. I don't think they will. But this is a Nevada team that has – while not anything like they've been the last two or three years, has gotten a little bit better as the season has gone along.
Okay. Well, Rocco, I want to ask you a question, though, about San Diego State here. Let's assume they do go through the well, we'll put it this way here. We're going to be talking about a term when we get to championship week, bid stealers or you know, teams that go ahead and steal a bid by stealing an automatic bid in a team that was not going to make the NCAA tournament as an at-large, getting an automatic bid, giving an at-large bid to a team from that conference. The Mountain West being the first conference tournament up, good chance for a bid thief here in the conference tournament, especially because if San Diego State does go undefeated, they may be asked to beat a Utah State for the third time in the regular season, and it's tough to beat a team three times.
Tough to beat a team three times. I like the way that this UNLV team's improving as well. Right. They'll be playing on their home court, which is always a big thing to keep in mind with the Mountain West tournament. And nothing better to kick off kick off that week with a UNLV championship. I also want to point out, up until the Utah State game on Saturday, this Colorado State team has shown a lot of improvement. Obviously didn't play well Saturday. So they're a team to keep an eye on at least for that. I think the Mountain West tournament's going to be really interesting, especially given the way the money's distributed. The Mountain West will be very interested in getting more than one team to the dance.
San Diego State.
San Diego State won't care.
At the Pit Out Wednesday. And again, their toughest home game remaining, hosting Utah State, who has bounced back well after that Boise State debacle to win a couple games. Real quick, the last conference of the night is the American, has become, in my opinion, I think you're down to a two big lead here with Houston and Wichita State. But should we talk Tulsa or should we?
We'll pull up both Tulsa and SMU.
Okay. And then I'm going to pull them back down again. Okay. Everybody, Wichita State, solid team. Houston, a very good team. Tulsa tied for first on the fact that, you know, they haven't played the toughest games in their schedule yet.
They haven't.
But they did beat Houston. But here we go. Tulsa, who lost at home to Arkansas State, lost to Colorado State, who Rocco just says, like, better, and has done nothing outside, nothing in Tier 1 whatsoever. So, David, Tell me why Tulsa's an at-large bid.
They're not. The question is, are they playing like one, and do they have the chances to become, like, if they beat Wichita and, you know, go to Houston and win and beat SMU?
Yeah, if they win the rest of their games, we'll talk about them. They got a chance at Houston. They got a game at Wichita. I just don't think they're good enough to win those games.
Okay, a team that I like is SMU, though. They have a bad loss at East Carolina.
They have zero wins against teams that we think are in the field right now.
Memphis is sort of on the bubble.
One win against a team that's sort of on the bubble. And you know what? I've been projecting Georgia State as my Sun Belt champion, so I'll give them that.
Yeah, and they're, you know, they're 15-4. And, they're 4-3 on the road, and they've beaten Evansville.
They beat Evansville right after Evansville beat Kentucky.
Yeah,
I was there.
It was a good game. Yeah, you were there. That's right. Yeah, I was texting you, I think, during that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say, there's too many landmines in this conference. Wichita and Houston are already there resume-wise. Memphis is really blowing it. I think for a team like an SMU or a Tulsa to build up the resume, they might get a win or two against the Wichita or Houstons of the world. But for every one of those, there's going to be a slip up against a Tulane or a Temple or a UConn that are just going to hold them back. I just think it's really too late in the game for them to get in the at-large picture.
I think there's also a decent chance that by the time this week of games is done, we could see UConn possibly at the – bottom of the American right here.
Yeah.
Fire Gino.
Okay. Quick note, the game I think I'm looking at, even though I just trashed on Tulsa, Wichita State at Tulsa on Saturday, one of the more interesting games on the schedule for this week at least.
SMU at Cincinnati.
Okay. It's a game between two teams that, you know, that could be an NIT preview game or a CBI preview game, David.
Well, Cincinnati, I think they've won five in a row. Four in a row.
You want me to pull up Cincinnati's profile here? Okay, we're now going very deep in, and let's talk a little bit of CBI bubble talk, David. Here's Cincinnati's profile.
Okay, let's get Cincinnati up there, and it's taking forever to. Yeah, so you don't see much of anything, but like look at their next five.
Look at that loss to Colgate. Yeah, look at that loss to Tulane.
Yeah, but they've won. I mean, I think that they're playing better now than they have been at any point of the year. And their next five, if they win all five, then I think they got something.
Okay, you talk to me when they win all five, because I can see them going 2-3 in those games.
And if they do, then we won't. Yeah, then we're back to where. Yeah.
On that note, though, let's go ahead and pull this down. Let's run through any other final thoughts. Sleek, let me start with you.
I mean, we also. There was also one other notable passing this weekend, and that was former ACC commissioner and Notre Dame athletic director Gene Corrigan. Under Corrigan's leadership in the ACC in the early to mid-90s, that's when they added Florida State to the conference. And there was also another interesting sidebar when Corrigan was AD at Notre Dame. This was back around 1984 when his own Irish team was actually on the bubble themselves, but ironically enough, because he made a case for Dayton to get in the field, the Flyers ended up taking the spot for Notre Dame and sent the Irish down to the NIT, and the Dayton team that year actually went to the Elite Eight before losing to eventual champion Georgetown. So rest in peace, Gene Corrigan.
And we tied in our top team that we discussed at the start as well with Dayton. Yep. Yeah, thank you. Rocco.
Yeah, I noticed during the A-10 segment, we didn't spend a lot of time talking about Rhode Island, but I think this team deserves some recognition. They've won six in a row, including a game at VCU, which really put them on the map for an at-large consideration. They'll have an opportunity to go to Dayton in a couple of Tuesdays. I think, you know, and obviously hosting VCU again on Friday night, I think this team is legitimately in the picture for today. And I think the A-10 between them and the other teams we talked about, including St. Louis and Richmond, I just have a feeling they're going to find a way to get two, and they even have a little bit of upside to get up to three. So it's definitely something I'm intrigued by. We'll see how that plays out.
I agree.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I agree with you about Rhode Island. I actually, if you're following the screen, I had their profile up.
I did. Dayton,
but David just rambled on so long that we had to move on.
I did. I was ready to say something, and I wrote them down as my final thought. So it all adds up.
I mean, Rocco sent me a note saying, I don't have a final thought. Let me talk about Rhode Island. Okay. So I just kept going.
Go ahead, Rocco.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to say is, would they be the first team to get an at-large bid and lose in the Ocean State tournament?
That is a great question.
Ooh,
wow.
Big question.
Ooh, big question, yeah.
Especially to Brown.
They failed to win the Ocean State tournament. Yeah. I think, David, we might be able to even get that Ocean State tournament up on this. Just for those of you that haven't had a chance to see it yet.
We've been showing this on Under the Radar, but do we have that, Chad? The Ocean State, that's...
There it is. Rhode Island did get by Providence.
Yes, there is the Ocean State tournament.
Brown, though, your champions, including winning the MEAC bonus game against Johnson and Wales. Yes.
I think it would be unprecedented.
But Brown, you can chalk them in for that silly tournament, because we are pretty certain that you do get an automatic bid for winning this event. Still waiting for final confirmation, though. But David, you want to finish out the show?
Yeah, I went back and forth. Should this be my final thought or not? I'll go ahead and say it. If you're watching this, then you certainly know what happened at the beginning of last week in the K-State Kansas game. Real ugly scene after the game. Fortunately, no one was injured in the fight, and while a chair was picked up, it wasn't used as a weapon. I thought the fallout was a little overblown. Not that it wasn't a serious issue, but what bothers me as much as the fight itself is the way that people like seem to use it as an opportunity to be seen getting mad. And I just felt that it was perpetuated over and over and over. And I also don't like how the same people that denounce it so hard, especially in the media, will be using those same highlights to promote future games. Another thing, like college basketball, and I know this might sound odd because we did have about two dust-ups in a week, really doesn't have a problem with brawling. Like, when you factor in how many thousands of games are played every year and how emotional it is and how physical it is. The fact that it's, you know, you might see one a year, if that, that's pretty damn good. So while you don't want it to happen, I don't think it's a pervasive problem. College basketball in the NCAA has a lot of things to concern itself with, but I don't think that's one of them.
Yeah, the biggest fallout of that was a 12-game suspension for D'Souza from Kansas, who missed half the season anyhow. So
yeah,
and although they are, as we record this, in a battle at Oklahoma State, but that game has not gone final yet, nor is Wisconsin-Iowa, so we'll not get a chance to discuss them. You can read about them in the write-up tomorrow morning. But on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back again Wednesday night with Under the Radar, Thursday night with a Bracket Rundown show. But on behalf of John Stalica, David Griggs, Rocco Miller, you can check him out at bracketeer.org as well. I'm Chad Sherwood, and we will talk to you again real soon.